This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome to a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, brought to you by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I'm Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchin, and today we are with Mass Live's very own Andrew Callahan, the star of Mass Live, I like to call you.
not there yet, but thank you.
And we're going to break down Chargers, Patriots, obviously, here with Andrew, but first and foremost, Andrew, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, appreciate the invite.
And the first thing we wanted to hit on today was obviously the quarterback matchup, Brady versus Rivers. Pretty big one for a divisional round playoff game. And first, Andrew, do you think that Rivers or Brady's had the better season so far this year?
I would give the slight edge to Rivers, and that's even acknowledging that the statistics are similar and both of them kind of faded down the stretch. But Philip Rivers was legitimately in the MVP conversation at the midpoint of the season. You can't say that about Brady. Yes, he's got the better weapons, but overall, I think you look at his body of work and it's clear cut.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy that, you know, the narrative of Brady's season versus the narrative of Rivers' season and the numbers are actually not that far off. And one we're talking about declining and the other we're talking about as an MVP. But Philip has probably played a little bit better this year. I would agree with that as well. Adam, what's your take on this?
I'd say the same thing. And I think, like we've talked about, the context has to be taken into effect with, you know, sort of the fluid nature of the weapons that Brady's been dealing with, with Gronkowski not playing as well and all that sort of stuff. So I feel like that plays a part, but I think without question, as far as if you're going to say who's had the better season, it'd be Rivers for sure.
But more importantly, this season or for Sunday really is what Philip Rivers is doing now and what kind of quarterback he is and what the Patriots defense is going to be going up against, not necessarily the talk of Brady versus Rivers as much. So Andrew, what have you seen from Rivers on tape, especially against Baltimore in more recent weeks where, I think he's really done a lot of things all season long that have been pretty impressive.
Yeah. I talked about him fading down the stretch, and I think the Ravens obviously are their biggest factor in that, right? I mean, he's played them the last two of the last 3 weeks and they're a top two, if not the top defense in the NFL. So they do what they do. You know, it's a lot of disguise, it's a lot of zone pressure stuff, and of course they've got multiple Pro Bowlers on that side of the ball. So for him, you know, he's taken what they gave him, and so it's a lot of throws to running backs. You know, he's top five in that category in terms of his targets given to running backs. They rewarded him with more than 1,000 yards this season, so they kept doing what they were doing, but the Ravens really did a nice job of that. Before that, a couple picks against Denver, but overall, I mean, he's the same guy that we've seen, just at a different level, you know, dating back to 2013, and then before that, I think you'd have to go back 10 years when you haven't seen this version of Philip Rivers. Good deep ball, good awareness in pocket. He'll take some risks, but a guy you can count on to drive down the field and win the game, which he's done three times this season.
Yeah, he's not necessarily a guy that has the best playoff narrative around him, kind of labeled a choker because he's never won that big game. But I don't know if this year is really fits that mold. And the one thing I always notice about him when I watch him play is how he throws with anticipation down the field. And you can watch him play and some of the throws that he makes, guys are like 5 yards behind the play.
Right.
And he just throws them right into the open space and gets that yards after the catch because the ball is so accurate and it's on time and allows them to pick up those yards after the catch. And another thing is what Belichick pointed out is that he's kind of Roethlisberger-like in the pocket. Mm-hmm. Where he can kind of shrug guys off and he uses his blockers very well in the pocket and he's very difficult to bring down. He's a big, strong guy. And he also throws from some crazy platforms too there where you're just like seeing these sidearms or these hip pocket throws. And sometimes I think some of that makes up for the fact that maybe his arm strength isn't where it was 5 to 10 years ago. And he doesn't have this elite big arm like a Patrick Mahomes or a Josh Allen or something like that, but he's able to be so accurate and on time that it kind of makes up for that.
And the other part, taking risks is that he's always had these bigger wideouts.
Yeah.
Go back to the Vincent Jackson when he was in his prime together.
Yeah.
Now Mike Williams, Tyrell Williams, you know, even Kenan Allen 6'2".
Yeah.
So they're able to help make up for that. And I think the risk reward always leans towards reward when he's making, as you said, some of those sidearm throws, escaping from the pocket or chucking it downfield.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the other thing too is he just seems like he's in control of these games when I've seen him this year. They seem to be able to, he seems to be effective whether or not they're behind by a couple scores or ahead by a couple scores. They really jumped out in front of a really good defense against Baltimore last week. And, you know, you know, going back to that Kansas City game, it was so impressive how he, you know, led that comeback on the road in such a hostile environment that, you know, you say what you will about Kansas City at home in the playoffs, but in the regular season, that place is a nightmare to win. So, I mean, I think you're just looking at a different guy maybe this year, and, you know, this playoff stuff might not really apply to him this year.
Yeah, it's a whole new year, and I don't know if what happened 10 years ago in the AFC Championship game or 06 or any of that really matters. But getting into some more of the schematics here with this matchup, I think that everybody is talking about how big of a factor the Patriots running backs, maybe even the Chargers running backs. These are the top two teams in terms of production out of their running backs in terms of receiving yards this season, and the Chargers are actually number one in that category. Do you think, Andrew, that the running backs are going to be, for the Patriots, are going to be as big of a factor out of the backfield as everybody kind of is thinking going into this game?
You know, for me, I don't think it will be as big because, like the rest of us can see, the Chargers acknowledge, listen, this is how they've hurt us in the past, right?
Right.
Burkhead, James White combined for a dozen catches a year ago. That's really where Brady got most of his yards in that 21-13 win in week 8, last time they saw each other. And Gus Bradley, as has been noted by a lot of different people, whenever they play Seattle or similar Seattle system, Atlanta, Jacksonville, whomever, the Patriots have gone to the running backs and successfully so. So I think they'll have a plan for that. Secondarily, I think they're better suited this time around to defend those running backs. I mean, by virtue of the losses they've had at linebacker and also just the depth they've had at safety, they started dropping guys down like Derwin James to play at that second level, who are much better equipped to handle a James White one-on-one. So
yeah.
I think the way the Patriots can go back to that old formula is if they prove that they can run on the Chargers dime defense, which has been their base defense, 6 defensive backs. That'll require, of course, probably going 21, 22 personnel, maybe a little bit of 12, and running ahead. That will force the Chargers to get away from that dime. Then you have a second linebacker on there who I think you can pick on in the passing game.
Yeah, it's a big thing for me, too, is that eventually Gus Bradley has to look at this and say, we can't let the running backs beat us
right.
every
What's the
single
definition
time.
Of insanity?
Yeah. Right, you know, and I think that the big thing is when they play that cover 3 defense that we see so often from these Seattle style teams, it leaves the flat vulnerable because you either got to match the slot receiver or you got to pass him off. But either way, you're leaving somebody open most of the time because the Patriots like to run seam routes down the middle of the field, those go balls down the middle of the field. And that's going to stretch the defense and kind of make that decision. It's like a chess match, right? You know, do you match the seam? Do you let the seam go to the guys behind you? But when you let them go to the guys behind you and they run like a 4 verticals or 2 verticals on one side of the field, now you're in kind of a, you know, in a bad situation for the secondary behind that. So that's kind of where the Patriots really beat them last year, was they were playing that pattern match cover 3 where they were matching the slot on go routes. And then that underneath stuff was just wide open because the closest defender was really like the inside linebacker who was playing in kind of a flat, you know, hook zone over the middle of the field. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, 10 yards of space there for like Rex Burkhead or Deion Lewis or James White or whatever. So in this game, I actually think the Chargers might play a little bit more man coverage because that's how you kind of, you know, mitigate that, is just have everybody take a man. And like you said, they've been playing with the safeties a lot more in the box. You know, a safety like a Dye or a Derwin James on James White is a completely different matchup than a linebacker on James White. So I think that you might see some man coverage. Adam, I think that everybody, you know, the narrative around here obviously is that these running backs are going to be a focal point. What do you think?
I totally agree with that. And I agree with Andrew that a good way to go about it for the Patriots would be would be some fullback work, you know, with Devlin. I think this is a good game for some I formation for the Patriots in terms of setting up play action. I just don't feel like this is the type of game where you want to drop bait Brady back as much as you will in some other games, just because of how good, you know, the defensive ends and the pass rush in general is for the Chargers. So, you know, I feel like, the age old thing with that is to run the ball and, you know, and sort of put the pass rush can't pin its ears back. And, you know, Brady's been really effective in play action this year. And if they can establish a run and sort of stick with it, regardless if it's, you know, super successful early on, I think that'd be a good idea.
Yeah.
And one more thing to Evan's point about choosing between, do you drop back when you're playing that cover three shell into the seams or jump up front? I think the Chargers to this point in the season have made their decision clear, and that's we're going to drop back because you look at the number one defense in the league against tight ends by DVOA. Who are you setting up those seams but tight ends? And right now when you look at Rob Gronkowski, he's just simply not a threat in that area. Not even just the threat he used to be. He's really not a threat at all if you can get a good jam. So you could probably even stay in that zone if you're able to hit him at the line, which will slow him as a receiver. And then if Brady's forced to hold on to the ball for an extra second, then you feel better about moving up a little bit further because without Josh Gordon, they don't have any downfield threats.
Yeah, exactly. I think that a big guy kind of taking advantage of that slot might be Chris Hogan. Maybe you send him up the seam a little bit more, give a little bit more speed than what Gronk has been able to give you over the last month or so of the season, or even really all season. That to me is how the Patriots, what personnel the Patriots put on the field offensively and how the Chargers then defend it is kind of the ultimate chess match of this game. Because that's really what's going to decide it schematically. If the Patriots do put a fullback on the field and they do try to run the football, is it more of a run to actually win the game by running? Or is it more like what they did against the Jets where they're kind of just threatening the run to kind of put some more linebackers on the field and then get matchups with the running backs that way? I think the other, you know, game within the game here obviously is going to be the Patriots offensive line blocking Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram, which I think is probably giving Dante Scarnecchia and Josh McDaniels some long, you know, sleepless nights right now, blocking those two guys. I thought what was interesting about what Andy Lynn yesterday said to us was that they played them more in run fronts because of the way that they've been playing in the back end with so many, defensive backs on the field. So they've been in a lot of bare fronts with those guys, and Bosa and Ingram have kind of given up some sacks, maybe some pressures on the quarterback in order to stop the run. But I think this is a completely different game plan than what they had against Lamar Jackson.
For sure. And even, you know, to the point about playing that bare front where you're covering up the guards in the center, Ingram is still getting pressure. You look at the sacks he got against Baltimore, and he's just a beast. I mean, there's a reason he's in the Pro Bowl this year, a reason, of course, Bosa was a year ago. And they're just two guys that demand attention. So when I look at this game, I go all the way back to the season opener, and the Texans play a very different system. But basically, you had two guys in the Texans, J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney, of course, who demanded attention. How did the Patriots handle that when you've got your attention split in two different directions? And it was basically an all hands on deck approach, wherein you were chipping a little bit, you were doubling Watt, you were running away from J.J. Watt, and Brady was getting the ball out of his hands very quickly. So I don't think necessarily you need to run away from one or the other in this instance, but they're going to require extra attention because we've seen Marcus Cannon struggle in these situations. You go back as recently as Pittsburgh with T.J. Watt, who's a little bit of a different player, but Ingram's going to hang on that right tackle, and he could give him fits if they're able to go for four quarters head-to-head.
Yeah,
I just simply don't trust the Patriots just sort of block these guys for four quarters in passing situations unless they get help. So, you know, like you said, Andrew, you know, chipping, all that stuff. And like I said earlier, like using the running game as a way to, you know, just help Brady and, you know, keep it from him just dropping back all game. You don't want any slow developing plays. You want quick passes. And take your occasional shot when you can, but it has to sort of be a balanced attack. It can't really be one of these, these games where they just sort of lean on, you know, Brady dropping back the entire game. I feel like this pass rush is too dangerous for that.
Yeah, and you definitely want to, kind of be a little bit more deceptive than the Ravens were, I think. I think the Chargers
should want to be.
Yeah, the Chargers really picked up on what the Ravens were doing and sat on a lot of those running plays as a result. I wrote about the tendencies, Ronnie Stanley's feet, those little things that they picked up on that they were able to just kind of sniff out everything that they were doing. And I think that Ingram is really, as good as Bosa is, he's a really good player too. Ingram, I thought, was the best player I saw in Wild Card Weekend. In that game, he just absolutely ruined the Baltimore game plan offensively, whether it was stopping the run or rushing the passer. And it's really going to be interesting to me to see how the Patriots block him when he rushes from the interior, because guys like Shaq Mason and Joe Tooney and even David Andrews at times haven't been known as necessarily the best pass blockers. And it's going to be interesting to see if those guys can hold up. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of double teams and a lot of, you know, things that they do strategically to kind of, you know, mitigate that. But also remember, when they do double team, Justin Jones blew up that game a little bit too with some bull rushes and some power in the middle. And it's going to be a tough time all day. A battle, really, to block this pass rush. But on the other side of the ball, the Chargers offensive line Andrews, probably one of the weakest parts of their team. And I think that the question is not, you know, how weak is the Chargers offensive line, but do the Patriots have the personnel to take advantage of it?
I think they've got one guy you could pinpoint and say, yes, they absolutely can. And we all know his name, it's Trey Flowers.
Right.
And he, you know, in a lot of ways has resembled the year that Stephon Gilmore has had on the outside, not to the same all pro level, but basically in the games when he's disappeared, so has the Patriots defense. You know, up until the Pittsburgh loss, when the Patriots defense did a very good job, limited the Steelers to 17 points. Every game the Patriots had lost, Gilmore had given up a touchdown.
Yeah.
And you look at Trey Flowers, when he hadn't been as productive, they were hurting. So for him, I think if he has a quiet game, so naturally rule that front, but it goes bigger than him, because I think when you look at the offensive line and also their backs and pass protection, there are some opportunities to be taken advantage of. And against bad offensive lines, you want to rush five anyway to generate one-on-one matchup. So someone across the board should win. And I think when you also do that, you'll trigger, whether it's Melvin Gordon or Austin Ekeler, stepping up in pass protection, which keeps them from going out in reps. So there's a lot of benefits here for the Patriots blitzing, which isn't to say they're going to send the house the entire time, but I think there are opportunities given their strength at corner, Trey Flowers getting a one-on-one if they send an extra man, and then you limit Phillip Rivers' options knowing he's going to spread the field. If he's not throwing to his running backs, it's a lot of targets you just eliminated off the board by bringing extra pressure.
Yeah, I
kind of agree. I think this is one of those games where you want to get more creative in moving Trey Flowers around too. I think this is one of those games too, where I think you also with a weaker offensive line, you know, you also want to make them think a little bit more so that, you know, that whatever the amoeba front or whatever you call it, where guys are standing around and stuff like that. I think that would be a sort of a smart thing to do, because, you know, just in general, offensive lines struggle with that. But when you go up against one that's not as quite as good and you make them think a little bit and bring pressure creatively, I think it's going to be even more effective.
Yeah, that's kind of what Baltimore did, and that's kind of the blueprint, I think, for the Patriots, is they put a bunch of different guys in two-point stances across the line and in between gaps, you know, the D-line with their hands down, and then they put the linebackers next to them, and then they either dropped one or they rushed one, and you didn't really know which one was coming, but they almost always brought an extra rusher and brought five at least into the rush, and that was kind of the way that they were able to confuse them and get the running backs, like you said, Andrew, into some pass protecting situations too. That seems to be like a good formula for the Patriots. I think that the main thing is that if you look at Phillip Rivers, when he's kept clean, his pass rating is 115 this year.
That's not bad.
Yeah, and when he's not, it's still very good for a quarterback under pressure. I think it's up in the high 80s, but you'd much rather a high 80s than 115. So it's going to be a huge part of this game is, can the Patriots scheme up enough ways to help their pass rushers get home, because they don't have, you know, Trey Flowers is a good player, but other than that, they don't really have a Melvin Ingram or a Joey Bosa that they can just say, just go after it and, you know, beat these weak offensive linemen. Now, I also think that Adrian Claiborne, we might see him up in this game.
Definitely should be active.
Yeah, because this one kind of reminds me a little bit of what they did against Green Bay or Minnesota, where they had some of those, I call them like NASCAR fronts, where they have multiple defensive ends on the field, and you put Claiborne in and you put Trey Flowers at DT. Maybe you have Adam Butler, Dietrich Wise, Trey Flowers, Adrian Claiborne. It's kind of your front four. That's probably the best pass rushing front four the Patriots could put together. And then you integrate the linebackers, Van Noy, Hightower, those guys on blitzes from there.
Yeah, and I think also interior pressure is going to be the big story here. And it's not only just simply because Phillip Rivers is not a guy who's very good on the move, but it's going to be a way to affect this Chargers offensive line, which even you want to go back to October's ago, again, the last time they met, Landon Roberts had an excellent game.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was shooting those gaps up the middle, and sometimes they drop their ends, and, you know, sometimes they're in a 3-4 front where Van Noy and Flowers are dropping, so really you're only rushing four, but you're getting him a little bit more on the move. And again, if you can engage those running backs in pass protection, not only does it stop them from getting out routes, but it puts them in a situation where that's not their strength, because Baltimore had multiple sacks bowling over Ekeler and Gordon.
Yeah, it was definitely an ugly day for the Chargers running backs and pass protection against Baltimore. Okay, so I think the other talk other than the running backs is a lot about how the Patriots secondary is going to match up against this wide receiver group. And I think everybody kind of has their theory, and I know I've changed my theory about five times, but basically, you know, Keenan Allen's a very tough cover no matter where he is, but he's also a tough cover because he's 50-50 slot and out wide. So he moves around a lot. And then obviously you have a beast of a receiver in Mike Williams, who's just a huge, you know, contested catch guy. And, you know, Tyrell Williams, Travis Benjamin, those are guys you got to worry about too. But with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, I think it kind of all starts and then trickles down from there. Who do you think gets Keenan Allen?
Man, this is so tough because I'm in the same camp as you where I went away from the Gilmore will take Keenan Allen because of, like you said, he's in the slot so often. And I think the best comparison we have probably is Adam Thielen, a guy who lives primarily out of the slot, a little bit more than Allen, but body type is similar, excellent route runner. And in that instance, they went away from Gilmore on Thielen, put him on Diggs, and then doubled Thielen for most of the game. And it makes sense because it's easier to provide help when he's in more of that interior position where you're surrounded by more defenders.
Sure.
On the other hand, Keenan Allen is so far and away their best option. If you simply eliminate him, that helps you so significantly with the rest of the pass offense. So I think you have to start there. My guess is you'll see Gilmore on Allen to start. And this also lends itself to a good matchup for J.C. Jackson, not just because Mike Williams isn't as good as Allen, but he has the deepest average target on the team. So when they're going to Williams, typically it's downfield. What is J.C. Jackson's greatest strength? Defending those deep balls. He's allowed 1 out of 14 targets on passes 20 yards or longer down the field all year. If you put him in a position to succeed and Gilmore, you have to be happy about, okay, we can live with Tyrell Williams and Travis Benjamin getting theirs.
Yeah, I definitely think that this is a week two where we see that bracket coverage come back.
Oh, a ton, yeah.
And, you know, this is – I actually got a cool play sheet from James Light on Twitter. Go give him a follow. He's a great follow for this type of schematic things from Belichick's playbook install from Super Bowl XXV, which is the Giants versus the Bills. And they had the bracket on Andre Reed, the Hall of Fame Bills receiver, all game long. And in that install, they have a, you know, kind of a check for if the guy is in the slot versus if he's out wide, because Reed was the type of guy that would move around a decent amount too. So I think that, you know, it starts with the matchup obviously itself. And I really do think that you got to put Keenan Allen, Gilmore on now, because it's just a strength on strength match. Those are the two best players on each side of the ball for both teams, and I just don't think that you mess around with Keenan Allen with putting a rookie, undrafted rookie like J.C. Jackson. Maybe he gets the McCourty twins. Maybe that's the bracket, is, you know, the McCourty twins on there. But Thielen kind of gave those two guys a little bit of trouble in that matchup. So I think it's interesting. It's a very interesting, you know, dynamic, because I think JC has a great chance against Mike Williams because, like you said, the deep ball and also just the tracking ability and the ability, the ball skills that JC Jackson has to fight at the contested catch point on those jump balls. I think he can lend himself to being good in that regard. But then obviously you're bumping Gilmore a little bit more into the slot than maybe you would like. So Adam, where are you at with this?
This kind of reminds me of the discussions we had before the Pittsburgh game.
Yeah.
And if you think back about that, I thought JC Jackson really played well against Juju in that game. You know, I mean, you probably give him the game ball if they could come down and score that touchdown and come back to win. If that's the case, because he broke up that pass at the goal line to give him a chance. So, I think I would put Gilmore on Allen, like you guys said, just because Allen's just the better player, and you want your best player covering him, and that's what Gilmore is best at, is you know, sticking with the other team's best player and shutting him down, or you know, at least limiting him a little bit. And you know, I do feel a little bit more confident in, you know, this matchup now, with just how J.C. Jackson has developed. He's really just come such a long way, and I don't feel, you know, he's necessarily a rookie anymore, just because of how many games he's played and gotten so much experience now. So, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a matchup that the Patriots will win 100% of the time, but I think, you know, I think he gives you a little bit more flexibility than you would have had, you know, week two or three.
And one last thought on this for me, I think they'll have contingency plans, you know, based on, if Allen is being doubled by J.C. Jackson and safety over the top, or maybe it's the McCourty twins, they'll be able to say, okay, we're going to switch to Gilmore. If it's the reverse and J.C. Jackson's getting killed by Mike Williams, say, hey, Gilmore, go shut him down.
Yeah.
But also, when you look at the matchup, I think it'll come down to, when you're in third down, are these critical got-to-have-it positions, who do you want in Keenan Allen?
Right.
It's Stephon Gilmore, there's no question. Yeah. So you go with that gut reaction. I think that's why it'll be the big picture plan. But again, if they come out and have the similar plan to Minnesota, you understand why, because of the body type, his location on the field, and the fact that there are other receivers who can do damage, and you can obviously erase them with Gilmore following them around.
It's really about the critical situations, right? Yeah. Like the rest of the game, you know, they might play some zones.
Five, six plays.
It's really about the third downs, the red area, that type of thing. And the last one we wanted to hit on here, Melvin Gordon obviously is going to be limited in this game. I just wanted to get your take, Andrew. How much of a factor do you think that's going to be that he's not going to be 100%? And also, like I said earlier, the Chargers lead the league in receiving yards from their running backs, and that's obviously an area of weakness for the Patriots. So as much as the Patriots running backs might be involved in the game plan, the Chargers running backs are probably going to be involved too.
This is huge. This is a massive break, I think, basically right after Phillip Rivers or Keenan Allen being a little bit banged up, because Melvin Gordon, we talked about this before, if the Patriots can, you know, establish a run, which I think is an antiquated way to look at football, but is important to this game because that's how the Patriots have been the last couple of weeks. If the Chargers can do that, then they're going to be able to obviously play the game they want to play it. If they're stuck in these third and sevens because Gordon is hurt and not able to gain his maximum yard as he normally would, that's a situation where the Patriots defense has been constructed for this season. They're not great in many situations, but they are outstanding in these third longs, which most defenses thrive in, but the Patriots in particular, because as we talked about, their strong secondary and their ability to get creative with their fronts. They're doing more this year than they have in a decade, so that's how they want to get there. So I think Gordon's greatest purpose, as much as the Chargers have thrown to the running backs, and we've talked about it all week, if he's ineffective in early downs, that really helps the Patriots out because they can get to where they want to be and they avoid their greatest weakness, which at times has been that interior run defense.
Yeah, especially if there's some weather on Sunday too and they can't throw the ball down the field as well. Even if it's just cold, it's harder to throw the ball down the field than it is when it's a little bit nicer out like it was in Baltimore on this past Sunday. And the other player here is Austin Eckler, who I think is kind of like a sleeper for this game. Yeah. Like, it's kind of like the Corey Clement of last year's Super
Bowl.
Start
him in DFS.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're playing daily fantasy, give him a start because he's a very elusive back, very explosive out of the backfield. They use him a lot on jet sweeps and other types of end around motions. He's the type of guy that has given the Patriots fits in the past, not necessarily your between the tackles running back, but just a pass catcher out of the backfield. If they can get that matchup on a linebacker, just like the Patriots are going to try to do with James White, then all of a sudden that opens up a lot of things for them as well. But Melvin Gordon not being in this game would probably be big, Adam.
Yeah, I think what we've been hearing, I guess, from the Chargers report is that, you know, Gordon will play, but be not at 100%.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think the biggest thing right now is how they use these guys in this game. And I think the Chargers will look at the Patriots and say, okay, we want to see if we can get these guys out on their linebackers, like you said, in the passing game. I think that's where those guys will be most effective in this game. I don't think they'll necessarily run all over the Patriots, but if they're not in, blocking these extra guys on blitzes and stuff like that, I think it'd be smart for the Chargers to try to get, Gordon and Eckler going in the passing game. So, you know, it's worked against some Patriots before, and it really is one of those things that if you can get going, it works for any team. So I think, you know, that's one of those things. Gordon's such a great athlete. Once he gets in the open field, he's so fast. I think he's sort of under his speed is a little underrated just because how bruising he can be at times too. I think it'd be smart for the Chargers to try to get these guys involved in the passing game as much as they can, just because it's something that's worked so often against the Patriots.
Yeah, I'm very happy that we aren't playing like the Titans or Brock Osweiler's Texans again or something like that. And we've had a few podcasts on some, playoff matchups that aren't exactly as juicy as this one. But there's a lot of really great matchups in this game, and it's going to be a good one, I'm sure, on Sunday, regardless of which way it goes. But Adam and I will be back next week, regardless of which way this goes, with either a season or, review type show, and hopefully not, a preview of the AFC Championship game. But Andrew, thanks once again for coming on. Always great to have you.
Yeah, always good to be here. Thanks, man.
And until next week, signing off for Adam Purgeon, Andrew Callahan, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.